ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. We are in our third and final hour, and we have a fantastic guest ready to go. He's been a guest on the show in the past. His website is geoengineeringwatch.org. That's geoengineeringwatch.org. It's like a database of all kinds of great information. And we have Dane Wigington on with us now. Dane, welcome back to the Hagman Report.
Hey, great to be back, guys. And I greatly appreciate your willingness to continue addressing this issue that people still aren't grasping the gravity of yet. We need to change that.
Yeah, absolutely right. We are, Dane, you're joining us at a great time. We are in the middle of hurricane season. We're seeing a lot of activity in this year, and it's even ongoing right now. We have a number of people asking questions from the few storms that have hit America so far. Hurricane Harvey, sat over Texas for a number of days, dumping historic amounts of water. And then you had the power of Hurricane Irma, thankfully that died down before it made landfall on the U.S. You have Hurricane Maria out there, Jose still dangling off the eastern coast of the U.S., and many people for the last few weeks have been bringing up the topic of geoengineering, weather weapons, modifying storms. Can you give us your initial thoughts on what you're seeing with this hurricane season and if there's any irregularities you're seeing with these storms?
Well, first of all, we've just come off about a 4,300-day major hurricane drought in the U.S. No major hurricane impacts, and I realize people remember Hurricane Sandy in that time frame. That was not a major hurricane. Did major damage, not a major hurricane. How can we go from that extreme to this? First, they've been steering away or blowing apart any major cyclone impacts to the U.S., for that period of time. And these technologies do exist. They're patented. And mathematically speaking, the odds of the very destructive hurricane seasons we had in 05 and 06 disappearing for 12 years and now rebounding back, that's simply a change in policy by the climate engineers. And regarding the engineering of these storms, not necessarily the spawning of the cyclones, because the extremely warm oceans are fully capable of spawning storms. They have been. They've just been suppressed and or steered away. But there is no question, absolutely no question, that they are being steered, manipulated. We have the radio frequency transmissions to prove this as they near landfall. When they're further at sea, they can be manipulated by the ground-based ionosphere heaters like HARP. I'm sure your listeners know what HARP is. Most of them, perhaps. If they don't, it's a large ground-based radio frequency microwave transmission facility in Alaska. That's only one of several dozen of those types of facilities around the globe, and their signals can be bounced off the atmosphere and directed to various places on the planet. When the cyclones are at sea, they can be directed by those facilities as they near any land-based stations where there are ground-based localized frequency transmitters. We have picked those up on radar. Did you guys happen to see, or I'm not sure I forwarded you, the animations that we captured as Harvey made landfall and Irma made landfall, the radio frequency interactions with the cyclones. Did you guys happen to see that?
No, I had not seen that. I read today about something about that, but I have not seen what you put together, no.
I would highly recommend your listeners look at that, and they can find those posts at geoengineeringwatch.org under the top stories and recent sections labeled with Irma and with Harvey. What this is are ground-based transmitters that are close to a million watts of power, okay? And you can see visibly the effect those transmissions are having on the cyclones, the rotation, the precipitation. As Irma came to shore, and that, you think people would wonder, how in the world could the quote-unquote meteorologists that are simply reading scripts from those who do the weather modification, they literally are reading scripts because Raytheon does all the weather modeling. In fact, Raytheon just got a new contract a day or two ago, another $300 million contract with the U.S. government to do the weather modeling for NOAA and the National Weather Service, because Raytheon is neck-deep in climate engineering, and they thus need to dictate the quote-unquote forecasting to match what they're manipulating in the field. So did you guys wonder how it's possible that in the case of Sandy in 2011 or 12, whenever that was, and in the case of Harvey and in the case of Irma, how they could have known so far in advance that those hurricanes would do what they do?
Yeah, absolutely.
Indeed. Dane, John Robertson, co-host, John, subbing in for Doug Hagman, and thank you so much for joining us this evening. Before we get too deep into HAARP, I just want to interject quickly that we have many listeners and viewers who come down somewhere between not understanding exactly what it is, and then we have some who just dismiss the entire thing as a conspiracy theory. And to those people, I just want to address quickly, in 2006 and 7, I had a downstairs neighbor. I was living in Pasadena, and she worked for a huge company in Pasadena. I'll just leave it at that. She and I had lunch one day, Dane, and she sat me down at a little cafe locally, took out a couple pieces of paper, and showed me what she was working on at her job. And it seemed as though it was almost cathartic for her, like she needed to, I don't know, demonstrate this to someone. And Dane, she literally sat there and with a ballpoint pen and a few pieces of paper mapped out the system she was working on for HAARP. So I want to assure people it is very real, and as much as my downstairs neighbor was part of one of the projects.
An immense amount of people are. Thanks for sharing that, John. And this is where those who are quote-unquote skeptical, they have simply chosen to come to conclusions based on preconception and ideology and not, unfortunately, investigation. The entire climate community all over the globe is discussing and has been discussing climate engineering. And this is where these science terms are most important. Climate engineering, solar radiation management, stratospheric aerosol injection. We must use the climate science terms and we'll find hard data, as opposed to the quote chemtrail term, which leads nowhere. In fact, there are some, Joe and John, that claim that there's some validity to this term because Dennis Kucinich tried to use it in legislation, and because there's an Air Force document that uses that term. The Air Force document that uses the term has nothing to do with climate engineering. It's a chemistry intro manual for first-year Air Force cadets. So there's no basis for the chemtrails term. If we use the science terms, we find science data. So every single science institution on the planet is discussing it. Every country in the globe is discussing it. They're simply, for obvious reasons, not admitting these programs are going on. And we have film footage of it happening, from film footage of the tanker spraying, lab tests from all over the globe to prove the primary elements in climate engineering, starting with aluminum, are raining down on us in unimaginable quantities. We have the animations of the radio frequency microwave transmissions interacting with the ionized, the electrically conductive atmosphere now from these particulate spraying. And that's what blew apart part of Irma's eyewall. It actually weakened Irma before it came and hit Florida. And you know, the damage was much less in Florida. But at the same time, when we have the perfectly paralleling of the coast in Cuba, which did immense damage there, now we're looking at Maria hitting, which is going to basically clean off those islands. I mean, if Puerto Rico takes a direct hit, well, that's going to do unimaginable damage. And is there some reason that they're now, after a 12-year drought, basically cleaning off a lot of the islands out there? Is there some purpose for an installation that they may want to use? We can speculate. But what we don't have to speculate on is they have patented hurricane suppression technology. Your listeners can look this up. And they are absolutely not only choosing not to use it, but these hurricanes are positively, whatever spawned them, and we're not saying we know they were spawned, because we can't know that. The oceans, again, are spawning cyclones on their own. They're more than warm enough to do so. But we can say with certainty they're steering them. And in fact, I'm going to send you guys right now, I'm not sure if you can open that email or not, but I'll send you a post. And if you open those animations, you'll be shocked. Your listeners will be shocked if they see what we recorded.
And Dane, real quick, I just want to say I watched the radio frequency video that you were talking about, controlling hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and now Jose. And maybe I'll get this over to Eric, and he can just take one graphic from that shows, I imagine, what our towers, you know, and it looks like they're in major cities, that there's radar or imagery that shows when these things activate. And it shows, you show how it basically can block the hurricane from moving forward, or it basically can steer it in a certain direction. And with Maria that's down there, you just said something interesting. You said about the clearing off of the islands. Are you saying that it's a possibility that they are looking to, you know, using these hurricanes to wipe off some of the real estate on those islands in order to build it back up for other reasons?
I think we would have to entertain that possibility. We know in the South Seas, when they wanted to test for nuclear weapons, they cleaned off islands and blew them up. At this point, it's more strategic in that we're facing biosphere collapse. It's not coming. It's not off on the horizon. It's happening right now. And I realize, especially in the U.S., how many people will scoff at such a notion, people who have been trained to believe that everything's fine, just like after 9/11, what do we have Mr. Bush telling us? Just go shopping.
Yeah. Well, Dane, let's do this. We've got you for the full hour. And again, thank you so much for your generosity and your gift of time this evening. Again, for those who are still catching up to geoengineering and to climate engineering writ large, first of all, I want to emphasize, not only visit geoengineering.org, but bookmark it. It is a go-to.
Let me hold you right there. If they go to geoengineering.org, that's a pro geoengineering website.
I'm sorry, I faux pas. It's geoengineeringwatch.org.
Yes.
Thank you, Dane.
Yes.
Geoengineeringwatch.org. And it's interesting you mention that because I've made that mistake before. And you get a site that's antithetical to so much of your work. So my apologies there. But let's do this. Since we do have you for some time this evening, for the scoffers, for those who are in some form of cognitive dissonance about what you were just discussing with Joe Hagman, let's just take a quick moment and go back to Project Popeye, early 1960s, the Vietnam era. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Dane, but were we not manipulating the weather during the dry season to create monsoon effect over the North Vietnamese at that time?
Actually, they extended the monsoon season with Project Popeye. So we have very, very clearly historically documented programs going back that far. Let's go back 20 years further still to 1947 with Project Cirrus, U.S. government, U.S. military project to manipulate hurricanes. So for 70 years, these programs have been going on, Project Storm Fury in the early 70s. And this is, again, historically documented. Nobody has to believe anybody. This is not theory, conjecture, or speculation. It's historical fact. So we simply have a society on so many levels that's unfortunately been trained to believe official narratives and ignore very verifiable realities that conflict with those official narratives. And we need to break that trend. So again, historical fact. We have film footage of these tankers spraying at altitude, KC-10s, KC-135, C-17s, turning on and off. And in fact, Joe and John, we are about to release, I have now World War II B-17 footage. Guys, you've both seen, and this is often referred to as an excuse that climate engineering is not happening. We're not seeing spraying. You guys have seen the big trails left behind the B-17s, of course, that people refer to, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We're both, everybody at Team Hagman, we're really into military history and World War II in particular, Dane.
Okay, now, we know the B-17s had, at minimum, they had water vapor injection systems on them that we were told were used only at takeoff, but how do we know that's only when they were used? And we now have. I have historical footage of B-17s turning the trail off at altitude like it was cut with a knife. Now, whatever that is, it's not condensation. We know that climate engineering programs based on historical documents were fully deployed over the polar regions just after World War II in 1945. They had to be doing massive experimentation before that. So we should ask ourselves the question, were the B-17s on some runs being used for those early experiments, unbeknownst perhaps to the pilots? Systems that could have been on timers or controlled in another means, as we know is the case now. But when we have film footage of a B-17 trail being shut off at altitude as if it was cut with a knife, instant shut off, that is not condensation. It didn't kill all four motors exactly at the same time. That is some sort of dispersion going on. And would we think that our government would want to make our B-17s targets? Because you guys know those trails made them targets, yes?
Okay. I've heard stories about that, yeah.
I mean, they were visible because they were much easier to see with these trails. And so, and again, the film footage we have is very damning. We'll release that. So it's very reasonable to conclude the experimentation has been going on that long. And again, when we have current film footage, of the tankers spraying at altitude. We have photographs. Again, your listeners can look at all this. If they go to geoengineeringwatch.org, look at the homepage, and they can search Geoengineering Watch spray nozzles, and they can find data on that. Any subject they want to find, if they put Geoengineering Watch and the subject, Geoengineering Watch ozone depletion, or any other subject, engineering winter storms, they can probably find the article. So we have 2,000 articles on the site, so you have to search a little bit sometimes. But the bottom line is we have photographs up close of nozzles mounted on the pylons aimed into the engine exhaust jet stream on commercial aircraft, which we also know are spraying, dispersing, because we have film footage of those as well, turning on and off at altitude. That can't happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just to, again, just to support and compliment what our guest this hour, Dane Wigington, is sharing with all of us. Dane, I know that you're very familiar with California, as am I. I'm a native Californian and lived for 18 years in Southern California. Probably one of the, I'm speculating, but I would assume, it's one of the epicenters of the geoengineering, the spraying, if you will. There are days in Southern California where the patterns were remarkable. I mean, they almost looked as though somebody drew them and said, go fly these plants. But I want to support what you were just saying with our listeners. Many times in LA, and many Angelenos will admit this, we see them turn the jets off and on. And that's not possible unless they were doing a massive ascent or descent that would be basically, as far as aeronautics go, impossible. Correct, Dane?
Correct. And in regard to, again, we have on, off, on, off, on, off. We have spectacular footage that is undeniably spray dispersions. Next, let's look at the mechanics behind the jet engines mounted on all commercial aircraft and all military tankers. High bypass turbofan jet engine, jet powered fan. 85% of the air that passes through that engine is non-combusted. Thus, by design, that engine is nearly incapable of making any condensation trail except under the rarest and most extreme circumstances. It's a jet-powered fan. Again, we're seeing sprayed dispersions, the tests on the ground. How much metal is falling on us? We have the geoengineers stating on the record, and your listeners can look this up as well. They search. You guys know who David Keith is from Harvard? He's the world's most recognized geoengineer. He's been on Stephen Colbert and every other show you can imagine. Have you ever heard the name David Keith?
No. No.
Okay, he's the world's most recognized geoengineer. If your listeners remember that name, David Keith. If they search Dane Wigington, David Keith, they'll see me confronting Dr. Keith at an international geoengineering conference. They only allowed about 3 questions. I was one, and they banned us. They banned me as part of the press from the next conferences because Dr. Keith so misstepped on this question. But after a 3.5-hour symposium with Dr. Keith proposing and pushing the goal of putting 20 million tons of nanoparticulates into the atmosphere annually, 20 million tons as part of the solar radiation management programs. And I asked Dr. Keith, had any studies been done, human toxicological effects, soil contamination? He tried to dodge the question by stating, more or less, I'm paraphrasing, that there's so much particulate matter in the atmosphere, a little more won't hurt. And I, before they cut me off, I followed up with, that particulate matter is not aluminum. Have you studied aluminum? And he paused. He said, let me be more careful. Have we studied the effects of that material? No. Could terrible things happen tomorrow? We don't know. And what kind of a statement is that from the world's most recognized climate scientist after pushing for 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates to be sprayed in the atmosphere, all of which we have to breathe? No studies whatsoever.
Dana,
that's where we're at.
Indeed. And you know, here at the Hagman Report, we've been following this story for a number of years, and we all do individual study on it, and then we're privileged to bring guests such as yourself on from time to time. Bottom line question with the aluminum particulates in the air. In your opinion, Dane, is the massive, almost exponential increase in Alzheimer's diagnoses over the past decade or so directly relative to the particulates being sprayed and geoengineering writ large?
It can't not be connected. It absolutely positively is connected. And I'm not stating that's the only source, but mathematically speaking, when we're talking about quantities like 20 million tons, so much metal, I was going to get to this before, I apologize, so much metal, it's changed soil pH values in Northern California 10 to 12 times toward alkaline. That's a phenomenal amount of metal. killing root systems. It's certainly enough to kill us. And in fact, to mention Alzheimer's now is the number one cause of death in some European countries like UK. Number one cause. Second or third in the US, depending on the study. And we think CDC is hiding some of the data. There is no question. It's in our air column. Our lab tests prove it. We're inhaling it. We have peer-reviewed studies to prove the effects. No question, guys. No question.
What about, you know, we see, and I'm sure, as you said, there's other factors that can contribute to this, but, you know, you have the Alzheimer's that are increasing. You have the autism. I believe it's 1 in 67 now. They say within, what, 20, 30 years, it'll be basically 1 in 2. And whether it's from contaminants in the air or poisons in the water and the food, one of the things that we know for sure is what you just gave as an example of you confronting David Keith is the mentality of destruction that these people have. And I guess a good example is when they were going to do the test on the hydrogen bomb, on the atom bomb, they were afraid that it might burn up the whole atmosphere upon detonation. And that's the same mentality that these scientists are using. And I believe there's even something more nefarious going on here, because what kind of scientist really would sit there and say, we're going to, you know, put all this metal into the atmosphere, but we don't know what effects it could have. I mean, science is a study that you test your hypotheses and your theories, and then you do the big changes after you know the effects that it's going to have. You don't do that in the reverse way by doing big experiments on the whole population and then saying, well, we're not sure if that's going to hurt or not, or if that's going to, you know, do damage or not. To me, that's just completely antithetical to science in general. And to see these people doing it, I would imagine that it's almost like they're being ordered to do it and study the results after the fact. Because anything else is just completely irresponsible, careless, and has no place in the scientific world.
There is no place for this type of behavior. The climate science community as a whole has betrayed the population, the web of life. We have to consider that there's gag orders on the climate science community. In the case of National Weather Service and NOAA, there's illegal federal gag orders right now. So again, for those that are skeptical, they should ask themselves why our government would put an illegal gag order on the weathermen, on top of the fact they have no First Amendment protection. But the type of behavior, especially in military circles, to let's try it first and figure out what happened later, that's exactly what's going on. We're not dealing with sanity, and the American population needs to wake up to the fact that the government is not there for their good. And I don't care who's in the White House. Don't care. If anybody was a threat to the power structure, they would already be dead. We have the history of John F. Kennedy to prove that. 1 week. That's how long he lived after he drew a line in the sand with the power structure. So it's all theater at this point, while the house, the proverbial house, is burning to the ground. And why am I focused on this issue above all others? Because we face a great many challenges. But if we have one issue that's the single greatest hole in the bottom of the boat, we must deal with that. We must deal with that, or nothing else matters. Everything else is the proverbial moving the deck chairs around in the Titanic. Right, guys?
Indeed. Indeed it is. And, you know, Dane, you make an interesting point, because there's, as Joe just stated, there's a scientific, or as he said, antithetical to proper science component here. And there is a political agenda. There's a political component. And feel free to tap the brakes if I'm jumping ahead on you here, Dane. But you just enjoyed a phenomenal success with a dear friend of the show, Kevin Shipp. And I believe that was July 28th in Northern California, correct?
Correct.
And I just point this out, all of our listeners and viewers, if you have not done so as yet, it is imperative. It's mission critical for everyone at the Hagmann Report. Go to YouTube, simply type in Kevin Shipp. There's two P's on his name. Most of you know who he is. And Dane Wigington. This, I have few times in my career seen a single video take off and go viral as quickly, Dane, as Kevin's effort at your event did. And I was hoping that for the benefit of our listeners and our viewers, perhaps you could summarize some of what he said, maybe give us some perspective for those who could not attend the event as well.
Kevin's a good man and a good friend. We have mutual friends, and we have an Air Force general Major General, that's a mutual friend as well, and we've been communicating for some time. The bottom line that Kevin's trying to communicate, the ship's completely off the rails. Completely off the rails. We don't have a country with a government. We have a government with a country. We would do well to remember that. Again, for those people who still naively think that the government exists to protect them, we need to wake up from that delusion. And I would state again, the population at this point, the vast majority of the population, is considered by those in power not just a liability, but you're not just expendable, I should say, but a complete liability at this point. And we cannot ignore the fact that eugenics has to be considered a part of what's going on with the climate engineering programs. Kevin would concur with this. We have Brzezinski, who just died recently, but you guys know who Zebrinsky was, and he stated on the record very clearly, easier to kill a million people than to control them. This is the presidential advisor going back to Johnson. So you guys know now, back to the cyclones and the – I want to weave this into what we're talking about right now. The cyclones like Harvey, for example, there's a lot of potential agendas we could speculate on, the knocking out of oil facilities to raise oil prices. We have weather trading derivatives, a lot of basic agendas. But we know a lot of that moisture was used to temporarily and toxically cool the eastern U.S. with chemical ice nucleation elements. Also, on top of that, it created a massive flood zone that now you guys know the C-130s are down there spraying NALED, right? Did you guys know that?
No, no.
Okay, so let's consider this. After this disaster, now we know, again, the toxic particles from climate engineering raining down on all of us, making us sick, all those metals are not only highly toxic by themselves, but when you mix them together, the toxicity increases radically. In some cases, 10,000%. In the case of mercury and aluminum, you mix those metals, it's 10,000% worse, 100 times worse. Very lethal brew. Now, we have open spraying going on. U.S. military C-130s are spraying a neurotoxin called NALED, supposedly to kill off mosquito populations when there wasn't even time for them to really reproduce yet. And they're openly spraying a population with a chemical that's banned throughout the world. Puerto Rico wouldn't allow this spraying to occur there. Maybe that's why Puerto Rico is about to get completely knocked out with Maria. But they're spraying, with U.S. military tankers, a known neurotoxin on the populations of Texas and Florida right now. So let's ask ourselves just how far off the rails the train really is. Our problems aren't off on the horizon. They're here. And our U.S. military brothers and sisters better take a step back and look in the mirror and remember the oath they took to protect our nation from all threats, foreign and domestic, because right now, those in the military that are participating in not only the NALED spraying, but the climate engineering, the toxic particulate spraying, are literally conducting biological warfare on their own citizens.
And there it is, powerful words, powerfully spoken, and true. Our guest is Dane Wigington. Two quick questions, Dane, before we move forward. Can you spell the, what is it, NALED? Help me out, NALED? Just so our viewers can search.
NALED, I believe, is how you spell that. And they're being sprayed with C-130s. Right now it's being sprayed. And that chemical, again, banned in Europe, just like you guys remember Corexit, sprayed in the Gulf of Mexico?
The oil spill stuff, yes.
So we have Corexit, you know, again, that name that certainly doesn't fit what it is, doesn't fix anything, it just poisons everything. But that chemical also banned throughout the world, didn't stop them from using it here, did it? So, and then let's go back to the Zika spraying. We have the governor of Florida financially invested in the highly toxic Zika spraying on his own population, when now it's been proven, in fact, in Brazil already, that it wasn't the mosquitoes that were causing the birth defects, it was the spraying. What a surprise. So when we have so much data from the vaccinations that we now have peer-reviewed study, and many of your listeners may not know this, we have peer-reviewed study right now proving vaccinations are radically harming our children. These are new studies. In the case of allergic reactions, 3,000% worse in the vaxxed kids. Let's go to African vaccinations. You guys know that there's big programs to vaccinate all the kids in Africa, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So let's look at some recent stats there. We now have stats in the first 5 months of life, the vaxxed kids, the kids that have been vaccinated in Africa, are 500% more likely to die. 500%. Wow. There's very dark things going on here. It's staggering. And when we consider that our kids here, within an hour perhaps of being born, they are whisked off to get a hepatitis vaccination. Those children are not exposed to that unless they're having sex or doing drugs. Why are they forcing that vaccination on our kids? And if you try to refuse that, we know from one case here in Reading, they'll call the police. Now, something is really wrong.
So, Dane, this is an assault within us and outside of us. Four case in points come up quickly. First of all, what we're discussing tonight with, in my opinion, one of the top geoengineering, weather, war, if you will, experts in the world, Dane Wigington. Folks, go to geoengineeringwatch.org, bookmark it. But we've got the spraying, we've got fluoridated water, we've got GMO foods, and at the practically the moment of birth, Dane, we've got vaccinations. This is a eugenics program that is comprehensive in its complexity.
It is exactly that. And if we look at how this can be carried out, because most people understand that you can't have a quote-unquote conspiracy that would involve this many people who would actually know what's going on, and that's certainly the case. Everybody's compartmentalized, just like in the military. Did the military pilots spraying Agent Orange on their fellow soldiers on the ground realize they were going to kill those individuals? Of course not. But we have a compartmentalization, and we have a society full of trained, programmed order followers. So in the case of the medical industrial complex, we have pediatricians. The average patient list or the patient load of a pediatrician in the U.S. is 1,546 patients, I believe, something like that, their average roster. And those pediatricians are paid by Blue Cross Blue Shield $400 per patient for all patients that receive, all children that receive their full set of vaccinations through 2 years old. If they don't fully vaccinate at least 60% of their patients, they lose the entire bonus. Now, first of all, how could Blue Cross or Blue Shield, how can they afford to pay that kind of bonus? Who's really paying those bills? And what's the agenda behind that? And can you imagine the conflict of interest that we're talking about pediatricians that stand to lose six-figure bonuses if they don't fully vaccinate kids? Is it any wonder they don't care about the safety and they refuse to look at the new studies and the obvious danger of injecting neurotoxins like aluminum and mercury into anybody, let alone a child? So we have a society full of absolutely willfully blind order followers, because we couldn't be in this dark place just because we have twisted psychotic people at the top. They need legions of order followers to carry out their bidding, and that's the type of society we have, and we have to change that quickly.
Dane, forgive me for breaking in on here, but did I just do this basic arithmetic correctly? Can you sincerely, can you tell us the number of pediatricians and the what the actual value of that bonus is per patient one more time? Because this is an enormous figure on my calculator.
The publicized data, and this is from a number of sources, publicized data that the average pediatrician, and I believe this may be a California statistic and not necessarily a national statistic, but it's 1,520 or 1,540 in that range. If they don't fully, the bonus per fully vaccinated patient is $400, and they have to vaccinate at least 63%, I believe is the figure, of their patients, or they lose the entire bonus. Thus, we have pediatricians now, and I personally know a number of patients that have been let go because they refuse vaccinations. They're cutting loose their patients that refuse to vaccinate because that risks their bonus.
So pediatricians are finding themselves, at least in the state of California, sitting down and wondering how much sin they're willing to commit for somewhere between about $600,000 and $750,000, Dane.
Depending on the amount of patients they carry, yes.
Wow.
It's a staggering amount of money. So, and again, I think there's three or four sources of data for backing up those statistics, and the figures are staggering. And is it any wonder? And where could that kind of resource come from to actually cover those kinds of bills? And then when we look at we look at what we know is in vaccinations, and Joe and John, does it really take a lot of study to understand that aluminum and mercury would be harmful to inject into us?
No, you know, that's obviously not hard to figure out. Being heavy metals, that's all you really have to say there. And what you said about the soil, I read an article from Politico that came out yesterday that talked about the lack of nutrients in our food. And the article pointed to the soil as being one of the reasons, but never explained why it is the soil was changing, except for what they called, you know, basically overgrowing is what their excuse was. But it talked about how the population of algae and this zooplankton that's in the ocean, how they started to create algae by shining more light on it, and it would create more and more algae, which the zooplankton then were able to eat a lot more than they usually did. But then it talked about, after a while, the population of the zooplankton began and continued to die off, even with this huge amount of algae being produced, which is their food source. The article goes on to describe how, as the light, the artificial light shining on the algae did create much more algae, it was much less nutrient dense, and these plankton were starving to death. Then they made the comparison that this is what is happening with humans and food, that there is a lot less nutrients in the food, and they go on to list several examples, one of them being the soil. But you said that in California alone, the amount of heavy metals being sprayed into the atmosphere has actually changed the soil, but in a way that's made it much more alkaline. Is that what you said?
It's pushing it toward alkaline in naturally acidic soils. And again, the readings that one would find there would vary depending on what the natural state of the soils were. For example, in Northern California, we have naturally acidic soils here. They can range from 5.0, 5.4, 5.6. We have the USDA baselines here. So I've been in the field testing with USDA scientists that I know personally, and that we have seen and documented pH escalations from 5.4, for example, to 6.6. That's a magnitude of 12. That's 12 times more, because a pH scale is like a Richter scale. Every point is a magnitude of 10. So we have those pH changes. We have bioavailable metals saturating the soils. That's a problem. But I believe the study you're referring to also, when that is a problem, that's part of why the nutrient content is going down. And the same thing is happening with pollen, and the protein content in pollen is down 25%, somewhere in that range, because of too much CO2. So this is where we need to not think dichotomously. Yes, CO2 is necessary, and this is not about Al Gore. I've stated too many times, remember, I'm not a Gore fan. He's a hypocrite. He's a part of the power structure. Carbon credits are a sham, but that doesn't mean we don't have a problem. Too much of anything is not helpful, and especially escalating at these rates when nothing can adapt. Nothing can adapt at this current time frame. In fact, the current changes happening climatically, biosphere-wise, are happening a minimum, based on paleo data, of 170 times faster than at any previous point in Earth's history. Nothing can adapt. So, again, the excess CO2 is like excess water. Water is necessary to live, the basic building block. If you're 10 feet under, you're not going to live long. So we have a problem with that. And in regard to the climate itself, and climate engineering, guys, plugs into all of this. We have methane. We have nitrous oxide. Methane in particular, and we're not talking about farm animals here. We're talking about formerly frozen methane hydrate and clathrate deposits. We have mass methane release is happening right now in the Arctic, and there's enough methane there mathematically to turn the planet into Venus. So climate engineering, in the attempt to try to mask the severity of what's unfolding and mask the damage done by anthropogenic activity as a whole, much of it from climate engineering for the last 70 years, they're making the problem worse by trying to hide it, like a pharmaceutical, correct, for the planet Earth. So we have, in regard to those studies you're speaking about, there's a number of factors, but temperatures are involved, excess amounts of specific greenhouse gases are a problem for plant life now, We have other problems that are not being alluded to in such studies, and this is an issue also. We have the particles in the atmosphere that's altering light wavelengths. You guys understand that, right? If you put light scattering particles in the atmosphere, that's going to change the character.
Dane, you still there?
I hear you.
Okay. Real quick, I want to ask you about the carbon dioxide because
did you guys catch all? Was that on the report? Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, it went through. There was just maybe a 10 to 15 second gap, and when you started out, I don't know what happened, but if you can explain to our audience and to us, you mentioned the high levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Now, a lot of what we hear and go over with the global warming angle of things, a lot of what we read, you know, people, if they're like me, they see an article on global warming and, you know, high levels of CO2, they immediately see the angle that it's a spin into global warming, and they just dismiss it. And then, at the same time, I've seen studies, you know, they talk about how the temperatures were, you know, much higher during the medieval time period. And then specifically when the dinosaurs were around, they say that, you know, the carbon dioxide was much higher and that plants and animals thrived when the carbon dioxide was higher. Can you give us some examples of how too much carbon dioxide can be a bad thing in our atmosphere?
Okay, and this is where it's important for people to, one, thank you for the question, one, not think dichotomously, and two, to actually investigate. Let's give some examples. Only 5 million years ago, and this is a geologic drop in the bucket, the Paleocene Paleocene thermal maximum, or excuse me, pedum event was 55 million years ago. That's a methane mass expulsion. The Pliocene epoch, excuse me, there's a lot of different epochs in Earth's history. The Pliocene epoch, 5.2 million years ago, the carbon count was much higher. The planet was not dying. It was thriving. The western U.S. was not burning to the ground. Again, only 5.2 million years ago. And your listeners can look up Pliocene epoch. And what was the difference between then and now? We did not have human activity, including climate engineering, completely breaking down and altering the system at the geologic blink of an eye. So we had, again, higher carbon counts, warmer planet, but we had more rainfall that wasn't being thwarted by climate engineering, and we had sea levels that were 100 feet, 70 to 100 feet higher. That's a problem. So again, we have to not think dichotomously, and that's what our society is trained to do. It's either this or that. We're good, they're bad. That's a problem. So this is not about Al Gore. Again, I have great disdain for Mr. Gore. He owns stock in the companies he claims to be fighting. He couldn't be a bigger hypocrite. But there are many factors to consider, and when the changes occur at this speed, when we're losing oxygen content, in those previous periods, guys, like the Pliocene epoch, there was much more oxygen content as well. It's plummeting right now. I'm not sure if you guys have had the chance to see any of our recent posts, but global oxygen content is plummeting right now. Very different conditions. You have atmospherically conditions that were very unlike. They're very different from what they were during the Pliocene. The other event I was beginning to refer to there, I was getting a couple epochs crossed up. The Pedum event, the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum, 55 million years ago. That was a methane mass expulsion, much like what's happening now, only what's happening now is far worse and happening far faster. During that event, at blinding speed, about in a period as short as perhaps 13 years, global temperatures escalated as much as 10 degrees centigrade. That's about 17 or 18 degrees Fahrenheit. That appears to be the scenario we're in right now. So I would encourage your listeners to understand this simple mantra, guys. Very simple. There's no legitimate discussion about the climate without discussing climate engineering first. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's reasonable, right? Second, and this is also very important, no legitimate discussion about climate engineering without discussing chemical ice nucleation for weather modification. Guys, you've seen the stories of the snow occurring in the middle of the desert or at the pyramids and so forth. You've seen all that, right?
Absolutely. Yes, indeed.
Which makes everybody jump up and down and say, we knew there was no global warming, and that's part of the psychological operations of climate engineering. Chemical ice nucleation for weather modification are patented processes that chemically nucleate the moisture in clouds. This is part of what happened with Irma, part of what happened with Harvey, and it creates a very heavy cooled insulator that descends to the surface, knocks the temperatures down on the surface, makes everybody think that everything's much cooler than it really is, because we know at atmosphere, at altitude right now, I'm communicating with a number of pilots, Gulfstream private pilots and commercial, and they are only seeing positive, extremely high positive temperature anomalies at altitude, much higher than normal, 10 degrees C higher than normal or more. One of the Gulfstream pilots had a forced emergency descent in the Gulfstream because the temperatures over 40,000 feet were about 25 degrees C above normal. The air was so hot it wouldn't hold the aircraft. So the colder temperatures we're seeing in some parts, especially in the eastern U.S., are only a cooler surface level. And we need to look at the bigger picture in order to understand what's really happening. So back to the original question of CO2, earlier epochs in Earth's history, very, very different conditions, much higher sea levels, huge problem for industrialized civilization. We have to take the whole picture into account. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Indeed it does. Dane, just so that we don't leave this dangling, and we've got you here for about another, I think, 13 minutes or so, you mentioned a few moments ago that these particulates, and forgive me for using layperson's terms, but these particulates are in fact changing the light. Now, over the past 18 months, I've had occasion to live both on the Northern Olympic Peninsula of Washington State as well as Pasadena, California, and it was a long transition from Pasadena up north, so about 1,300 miles north. Dane, upon returning to Pasadena after, say, 3 months, 4 months up on the Olympic Peninsula, right on the Straits of San Juan de Fuca, the sun is noticeably different in Los Angeles. And I know that might sound kind of kooky to some people, but I'm being very sincere. The sun is glaring. It's hot. It's white. It feels almost like those pigtail bulbs that they've been cramming down our throats for about the past 5 years. Is there something going on? Is the sun actually a different color and hue in, say, Southern California versus, say, Northern Washington?
It just depends on the amount of particulate matter in the atmosphere. Also, we have massive, again, ozone depletion going on. And on that regard, and this relates to what your original question, for those that have been told it's the hairspray cans that are depleting the ozone layer, although chlorofluorocarbons are a problem, climate engineering is an exponentially larger problem. And that's not hard to figure out. We know one Air Force tanker can carry and disperse 75 tons of particulates or more. Obviously, that's a much, much bigger problem. So the ozone depletion is immense. We're now getting UVC on the surface, not just massive amounts of UVB, which has escalated exponentially, but we're getting UVC. That's the last band of UV radiation before X-ray. So that's optically very damaging. So it would depend on how thin the ozone layer as measured in Dobson units is above your particular location.
Okay. Dane, I want to ask you a question. I know we only have a few minutes left. I'm just looking at some models right now to talk about just Hurricane Maria that is in the Atlantic Ocean right now. This storm went from a tropical storm this morning. It's now a Category 5. Have we seen intensification in storms like this before?
It's called rapid intensification, and it's happened a lot lately, hasn't it? With Harvey, Irma, and now Marie. What it appears they're doing is allowing those cyclones to near their location without strengthening too much, and they can knock that strength down again with the ionosphere heater transmissions I mentioned earlier. They can push the air down from the atmosphere that blows out the convection, weakens the storm. Once they get nearer their what would appear to be at this point target areas, they're allowed to rapidly intensify, which they will do on their own as long as there's no conflicting upper air wind currents. The ocean temperatures are scaldingly hot, and it appears again that they're keeping the cyclones from strengthening as they're crossing the Atlantic. When they're nearer their what we can only at this point consider a target zone, they're allowed to strengthen. Joe, if I could back up again, that one question I wanted to answer though to fill in that blank on how warm it is now compared to the medieval warming period, so forth. Right now, it appears on the climate data that's available, and this is not from NASA or NOAA, the temperature readings we get on the ground, I would encourage your listeners to verify this. Everywhere we check a reading, it's higher. The actual reading on the ground is significantly higher than the official reading. so much so that the data indicates we may be 3.5 degrees C warmer than the start of the industrialized period. If that's true, that's warmer than at any period in time that humans have existed on the planet already. So I would encourage your listeners, again, not to believe me, not to believe any other source. They should check the official temperature readings in their area with their own readings taken in the shade and see what they find out. Everywhere we check, the readings are being underreported, not overreported. UV readings, completely fictitious. All the UV readings we get have no basis in reality. The UV is exponentially higher and more dangerous than anything we're being told. And why would this be a surprise? Do we think they're going to tell us how bad it is and trigger panic in the population so the population knows what's been done to them without their knowledge or consent? Not going to happen.
Okay. And, you know, it's very interesting as we see this hurricane season, just my last comment on the hurricane season here, that, as you said, what was it, 4,300 some days without a hurricane? Now we're seeing a very active season, and people, because of the eclipse, and there's, you know, the star alignment coming up on September 23rd, many people are trying to make the case that this is something biblical and so out of the ordinary that is going on, that they're trying to tie it to biblical events. I just want you, Dane, to speak. In a normal active hurricane season, this is about normal, right? For a regular hurricane season, how many average hurricanes, you know, make landfall or storms get named? Can you give us just some of the details on what an average hurricane season looks like, since we've had such variety these last 10, 15 years?
Can't give that because we have okay. No way to know what normal is at this point without having the intervention, the system stopped. But let me add this. While we've had the near 4,300-day major landfall drought, the rest of the planet has been getting slaughtered with record hurricanes. Let's take the Philippines, for example. The Philippine leader, Duterte, you guys know who he is, and he told the U.S. To get out, basically. As soon as he took that position, his country was slaughtered again and again with record cyclones like Cyclone Haiyan in 2014. You guys remember Cyclone Haiyan, the most powerful hurricane landfall ever, 195-mile-an-hour wind, cut a swath through the Philippines. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yep.
Guess what happened afterward? U.S. moved in, started setting up bases under the guise of humanitarian efforts. Same thing happened in Haiti. Same thing happens in a lot of places. So while we had the hurricane hiatus here, that many people claim was proof that there was no warming going on, we have the Gulf of Mexico that we see hurricanes again and again and again trying to form. They will not let them form and spin in the Gulf of Mexico, likely because the Macondo well, the Gulf of Mexico blowout, is still being sprayed at the wellhead with Corexit to make sure that oil sinks, and they don't want all that churned up. How could there be no major cyclones in the record warm Gulf of Mexico for so long? Harvey cut across and strengthened right before it made landfall, but they did not let it spin around the middle of the Gulf and do damage, did they? Neither did they with Irma. They directed it back onto land. Almost 90-degree northerly turn. So there is no question they're suppressing cyclones, but they're going on around the west of the world and doing great damage, even right now in the Western Pacific. Right now, it's going on. Big cyclone impacts there right now.
Wow. So, Dane, two things quickly, and we've just got you for a couple more minutes. What you effectively just said with Corexit and going back to the oil disaster back in, I believe it was 2011, were they to allow these to spin up normally as the atmosphere and the Earth would dictate, they would literally we would see a hurricane deluge of Corexit. Is that accurate?
It would appear to be. And what happened to Matt Simmons? I don't know if you guys know who Matt Simmons was. He was the world's most recognized authority on deep sea drilling. He went on CNN after they supposedly plugged the Macondo well. He said things they didn't want him to say, that they were. He stated on the air that they were still spraying Corexit at the wellhead, that the seafloor had heaved. They would never plug that well. He was found dead one or two nights later in his pool. Obviously, they didn't want that to get out. So at this point, there are many, many agendas being carried out. And what I would say is this again to your listeners, and I understand the polarization that's going on, and that's one of the primary purposes of climate engineering, to create engineered events in a way that confuses and divides the population. I would simply again ask that people get over their disdain, their justifiable disdain for environmental groups like Sierra Club, Greenpeace, immense hypocrisy coming from those groups. 350.org, who receive their funding from the Rockefeller Foundation. None of these groups will talk about climate engineering. None of them. And that's the goal. So in order to stop climate engineering, we have to recognize certain fundamental truths. We have to stand on credible ground. And that is this. Even if we ignored all other forms of human... Ignore that, can we? The human race has not been good stewards of the planet. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, I would agree with that.
Been poor stewards. So even if we ignore all other sources of damage, if we only looked at climate engineering alone is doing immense damage to the planet and warming it overall. These particulates that deflect some of the daytime heat also trap heat at night. That's easy to figure out. It's trapping radiant heat at night. It's shredding the ozone layer. It's disrupting the hydrological cycle. Climate engineering is fueling the warming of the planet. So if we adopted a simple mantra, we recognize the planet's warming, but climate engineering should be our first order of business to deal with that, we may coax the climate science community out into the open and get them to join us in the battle to stop climate engineering. If we can stop climate engineering, we can reassess where we're at. But while these programs of global intervention are going on and the damage they're doing, if it continues, we're not going to be around long, and that's a mathematical statistical fact.
I agree with you, Dane. Folks, Dane Wigington is our guest. Geoengineeringwatch.org is the website. Make sure you bookmark that website. It literally is a treasure trove of data dealing with all different facets of what we see happening from chemtrail spraying to weather manipulation and the causes. Geoengineeringwatch.org. Dane, thank you so much for taking the time out to be our guest tonight, and we look forward to having you back.
Thanks for addressing this issue, guys. And again, we try to provide the materials people need to wake others up around them, and passing on credible data is far more effective than pointing at the sky and ranting. So I hope people can use our site for a resource. We'll do our best to stay ahead of breaking data. Thanks, guys.
Dane, thank you so much, and we will certainly be in touch and welcome you back again here sooner than later.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Well, that will do it for us tonight. We had a fantastic program. Michael Thompson was our guest in the first hour, Republican Chick in hour two, and Dane Wigington in hour three. Folks, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and to follow us on Hagman Report. And also check out our two new shows, The Doug Hagman Show, 9 to 10 a.m., and The Hagman Daily Show with John and myself, 2 to 3 p.m. Both shows, each episode, are available for podcast download. Just go to HagmanReport.com, and at the top there, click the two new show icon or the listen icon, and both will take you to those shows. We have a great week lined up for you tomorrow. My father will be back, but I want to say thank you to John for sitting in these last four shows for my dad. It's been a lot of fun. I know we get to do it on a daily basis on our show, but it's been a lot of fun having you do the main show and not having the grumpy old man around all the time.
Well, that's very gracious, Joe, and I want to take that thank you and pay it forward to all the listeners and viewers who welcomed the different combination of Joe and I into your evenings, and it was certainly an honor and a privilege to fill in for Doug Hagman, who will be back tomorrow evening, Tuesday, September 19th. Joe, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, John, and thanks to everybody out there, all the listeners, all the people who support our show, whether with monetary support or with prayers. We can't thank you enough for being out there and being the foundation of this show, The Hagman Report. That'll do it for us tonight. Until tomorrow, God bless and have a great evening.